We never, ever clap unless we do. That's the rule. We celebrate in our covenant. As you see, we promise to welcome and respect divergent opinions and beliefs. We believe we can live in peace even when we see things rather differently. Today's a case in point. I do believe in politics, ugly and painful as they are. I read the paper pretty much the whole thing every single morning. Got to find out how Dear Abby's going to handle that teenager. Keep the brain sharp with the Sudoku. And read all the editorials to find out how are the dogs barking today. I do believe in politics, but I will share that sense of despair and weariness and of frustration. Certainly the campaign took its toll on our collective pocketbooks, our collective patience. The estimates are that $6 billion was flushed down the tubes over the course of the campaign. $60 million donated by one single individual, that fellow Sheldon Adelson. An estimated 1 million TV commercials. 17 months of wall-to-wall rhetoric, writes Thomas Frank in Harper's Magazine, leading to the same old battle for the same old swing states with the same old consultants and the same old following of the press, now with magic computer walls and so forth. But then it was over. And we were, again in Frank's words, right back where we started. Quote, like some kind of electoral battle of Verdun, World War I, this costly triumph had shifted the front lines only slightly. House, Senate, and Oval Office all stayed in the same hands. All those commercials, debates, rally speeches, books, profiles, and columns had no more changed the world than a season's worth of Major League Baseball or a feud between American Idol judges. Maybe. I am one who still believes who you vote for makes a very serious difference, but here we are on the fiscal cliff, and the rhetoric hasn't changed at all. Burk, 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 burk. UU peace activist Judy Morgan calls it our uncivil war. Now, why talk about politics here in a religious community, you might fairly ask. It's because Unitarian Universalists, by design and by intention, are deeply concerned about the real world, the world of human beings, the world of decisions that affect our daily lives, our peaceful society, our cooperation, our fulfillment. Our religious vision centers on humans treating humans and animals and the earth in the most sustainable and gentle way. The thing is, everybody wants peace. Everybody wants what's best for people. I believe this with all my heart. It's just that the division is created because, as Bev noted, we're failing to have discussions about morality and ethics that are often in entirely different languages. We can't even really hear what the other side is, and I'm making no assumption about what side you're on. Side. Nevertheless, you do various studies, you ask people questions, you sort them out, and there are real differences. Again, Judy Morgan, conservatives tend to see the world through a lens of values such as order, strong leadership, individual responsibility, greater emphasis on faith. The world is seen as having much danger and evil in it, and that ain't wrong. And ideally, in the home, a strict parent appropriately protects and disciplines his children to keep them from harm or immorality. I say his on purpose. Liberals, on the other hand, tend to see the world through the lens of values of community, collaboration, nurturing, and fairness. The world tends to be seen by such folk as evolving and mostly safe. And in the home, the nurturing parent appropriately encourages children to explore and develop their own understandings. And that's why this is called liberal religion, right? Because that's what we do here for each other. My job is to say, find your truth, find your peace. Although, I will say this, the 11 o'clock service starts at 11 o'clock. Be here on time. Oh, that feels so good, I gotta say. Heed the guy in the robe, for crying out loud. You know, I am a liberal person politically. I can't deny it. But it is interesting how over time those other modes have come to feel a little more comfortable and a little more reasonable. I kind of felt good. Yeah, okay. So how to solve this problem? How to get people to talk to each other? How to figure out even why we are not talking to each other or hearing each other? This was the project that Jonathan Haidt, I think, H-A-I-D-T, anyone named that and know how to say it? I want to say Haidt, okay, because I don't want to say hate for the whole rest of the service. So Haidt it is today. Thank you, Jonathan. He is a researcher into moral psychology. How do people come to have the ideas about right and wrong that they have? Is that something that develops over the course of our life? What are the systems of different cultures and different people, and is there anything that we have in common? How are we alike? What are the bridges that could be built? One major observation of Haidt in his book, The Righteous Mind, which I commend to you, quite interesting, wonderful book, is first and foremost, we must approach any moral discussions, ourselves and others, with humility, because our moral decision-making turns out to not be as simple as it seems. His image is that our minds, our beings, ourselves, as we try and decide what's right and wrong, we are like a rider on an elephant. All right. About 90% of what makes our decisions for us when we take various tests about morality and so forth is a whole host of largely unconscious, intuitive, emotional, and physical reactions to things as a result of how we were raised and the sort of just innate character that we have. 90%, he would argue, of moral decision-making takes place below the rational mind. And so, you know, you got your rational mind, and you're sitting on that elephant. Oh, and you can even tell yourself you're steering it, you know? As long as it's well-fed and everything's going along fine. But then Uncle Dan brings up that political issue at the Christmas table. And before you're even ready to start talking about, you know, policy or how we might solve the problem, your elephant is on the run. You hate America! You're mean! You know, And at that point, research shows the rider on the elephant's primary job, if you can't control even it, is to justify to yourself why your elephant is running in that direction. Right? So, with perfectly reasonable and rational explanations. This is true whether you are conservative or liberal. So we gotta okay, slow down, keep an eye on the elephants. Haidt also has studied extensively the research on moral development and moral modes of thinking across culturally, all around the globe. He himself got turned in this direction. He was studying kind of Western developmental psychology and so forth, and he was interested in this topic of morality. He happened to take a trip to India, and they were comparing a set of questions about actually private disgusting behaviors. And they had asked Western people, are these things immoral? And they asked the people in this Hindu village, are these things immoral? And these were gross, gross things. Okay, I won't name them. But imagine the grossest thing you could do naked with a chicken or something like that. I'm not lying. In the privacy of your own room, is it right or wrong? Right? And most Western people say, even though they're like, well, you know, the chicken wasn't alive anymore. So no victim, nobody harmed, right? In the end, even though they're disgusted and squirming, no animal was killed or anything, they have to say, I guess it's okay. Because our ethic is so much centered in freedom. In people's, if it doesn't hurt anybody else, you can do what you want. Whereas the Indian villagers, they said, right away, absolutely that's wrong. These sort of victimless things that were gross. And it's because they have a much higher sense of the sanctity of the body. Okay, just in this particular comparison. And that got him thinking, what are these? Okay, so where do we differ? And where are we similar? Why morality varies so much across cultures, yet has so many recurrent themes? And Haidt proposes that all of us across the globe have six basic sort of psychological structures of morality that emerge out of our evolutionary history. And they are care, or the prevention of harm, fairness, the prevention of cheating, liberty, the prevention of oppression, loyalty, preventing betrayal, authority, believe it or not, and sanctity, preventing degradation. And then what turns out to be so interesting is he says that the current American culture war can be seen by arising from the fact that liberals try to create a morality relying primarily on the care foundation. Equal treatment. People should not suffer. No one should go hungry. No one should. They tend to rely primarily on the care and harm foundation and fairness. A little bit of liberty in the mix. Conservatives, especially religious conservatives, use all six foundations in more equal measure. It's like you get 60 units of morality points, and liberals put 40 of them in care. And the others, and it dribbles off like this. Not a whole lot left for authority. Sanctity. Whereas, for, again, whatever reason, upbringing, traditions, personality, conservatives tend to balance them across. And if we can recognize this, if we can recognize that we actually have these similar ways of viewing the world, but we're just coming at it differently, then those of us who care to bring peace can begin to speak each other's language and find some kind of balance. Just another word about these foundations. I urge you to read the book. Care, he says, comes from our long evolution as mammals. We got to raise those babies for 18 years, or 25 or 30 years, as the case may be. And to do that, we have to have elaborate attachment systems, the ability to feel and dislike the pain of others right here on the physical level. That sense of care for our young underlies all our virtues of kindness, gentleness, and nurturance. And so from that sense of care, we try to take care of our seniors, for example. Or we think, how shall we take care of the poor? Fairness comes from the fact that the little group of monkeys had, in order to function as a society for each other's well-being, develop a sense of reciprocal altruism. We had to take care of each other, and no group can survive if there's too many people who are free riders, who are cheating the system. So one part of fairness, interestingly, is that, you know, everybody needs to do their part. Liberal people tend, on the fairness side, to think of equality under the law, equality of access. Conservative people tend to see fairness as related to proportionality. You should get what you work for, perhaps, would be one way of thinking of that. Liberty and oppression. Everybody has this. We're free beings. It comes from feelings of resentment we have when others dominate us. Everybody has this. Its intuitions, he notes, are often in tension with those of the authority foundation. The hatred of bullies and dominators motivates people to come together in solidarity to oppose or take down the oppressor. We've seen this around the world this year. And then loyalty relates to our long history as tribal creatures, our groups fighting against one another, competing, we should say, this tension and this creative struggle that allows evolution to move forward. That underlies virtues of patriotism and self-sacrifice for the group. Where do we fit on this ourselves? You might ask, how do you feel about Lieutenant Bradley? Thank you, Manning. I wanted to say Morgan. Was what he did good or bad? This is the WikiLeaks guy. So onward, you see authority, another one related to our long primate history of hierarchical social interactions. There's generally been an ape or two in charge of the tribe since we were long, long ago. And last but not least, sanctity. This is the one I mentioned that the Indian folk responded to so strongly, which is just shaped by our bodies. It's shaped by the psychology of disgust and contamination. Animals know, don't eat the gross stuff, right? So, yeah, there's catfish. There's no explaining that. Nothing is wasted. Truly. And this when you look back to all these ancient purity laws and so forth that seem so strict to us now that we have clean running water and refrigeration and so forth, you see that a lot of the purity things that guided people's morality, it's just really based on staying healthy. And it underlies the widespread idea that the body is a temple which can be desecrated by immoral activities, even if there is no victim. It's so great in the book. Haidt puts up bumper stickers for each of these moral foundations and asks you to pick who is a liberal or a conservative. The bumper sticker that says, "My body is a temple," or the bumper sticker that says, "My body is a playground." I'd like to think with most of these, we don't have to pick either or. We can see that there's nuance to each of them. These sort out ultimately, in Haidt's vision, into just three basic concepts, three things that guide our moral thinking, and every human being has them. They are autonomy, community, and divinity. Every person wants to be free and is. And has a set of ethical, to varying degrees, of course, and varying relationships with the community, but all of us want to be free to live our lives. Also, all of us want and need and depend upon community. And at some level, 99.99995% of us recognize that there is something sacred in and of each of us by virtue just of our living. That's true right now. Political division or not. So do not despair. Do not despair. Yeah, I'm looking at you. Do not despair. Democracy, as Winston Churchill said, is the worst possible form of government with the exception of all the others. And Haidt's insight is that as long as we keep thinking we got one right point of view or the wrong point of view, we'll miss the point, which is actually to forever be competing and arguing and disagreeing well and peacefully, because that's what democracy is about. And in the end, it may not feel like, you know, some dreamy Star Trek planet where everybody dresses the same and no one ever fights or anything. But as Peter Peiser said in the morning service, it's better than tyranny. It's better than a dictatorship. It's just about better than anything else going on the planet right now. And friends, the story ain't done yet. The story is not over. My prayer now, after this weekend, as we face perhaps finally a conversation about gun control, is that perhaps those of us who are most motivated by the care ethic can learn to understand and utilize some of the other frameworks. Talk about the liberty to go to school safely. Talk about our loyalty to our children. And as always, practice compassionate, empathetic listening, not trying to bring people over to your side, but just to generate understanding of what we have in common. Heeding the wisdom of all people of Rodney King, who Haidt quotes, who said, "We are stuck here a while. Let's try to work it out." May it be so.